All right, so Tara Orko, Pat Meyer, Sandra Hungy.
Here.
Rebecca Rodriguez.
Here.
Sitting here on the couch.
Here.
Rebecca Holliday.
Yeah. Here.
Tara Ollendahl.
Here.
Jennifer Ryan.
Here.
Okay, we have a quorum. We have the agenda that was set out. I'll entertain a motion to adopt the agenda.
Move we adopt the agenda as written.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion? Motion here. All right. Second item of business, the approval of minutes. We have an audio recorded minutes. For example, as we adopt the minutes to recording, but I'll entertain a motion to adopt the recorded minutes.
Move the motion to adopt the recorded minutes.
We'll give that a second.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carried. All right, and we move into reports. We have quarterly reports from the Humane Society of Southwest Washington Statistics. Let's start with the quarterly reports, Doc.
Did y'all have those? Did you get those?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's just basically a review of that. You can see our first quarter of this 2024, January, February, March. Compared to the first quarter of 2023, there's about a 2% increase in requests for service. It's not huge. However, I would point out that one of the largest jumps in calls for service has been animal bites. So that's gone up significantly. And I expect that trend to continue. Let's see, at-large pets have gone up a little bit. Livestock cruelty, animals in distress, vicious livestock assists, and confined pickups also went up substantially. That's not true. That one was wrong. Otherwise, they either stayed pretty much similar or have gone down just a tiny bit. Our notices that we've issued have also gone up from 18 at this time last year to 42. And our penalties obviously go up with that. So our penalties have gone up as well. Hearings have stayed the same. And licensing revenue is down by about $10,000 from the same. Total calls, intakes for sheltering have gone up from 265 to 305 in 2024. So over the course of the next two quarters, I expect our numbers to continue to go up as we get into a more busier season for us.
Mm-hmm. Dollars are going down and work is going up.
Okay.
Wow. Any questions for Donna?
Question, based on the starts or like printers, very busy. The chart that has the offenses on the website, what categories are the ones that you said were up?
In terms of the citations or notices that we've issued,
mm-hmm.
I don't have that breakdown, but I can get it for you later. Okay. For sure. Yeah, I don't have that in front of me, or that's not in the data. If that's something that you want, how easy, Jackie, is that to pull from the system?
You mean like what the citations are being written for?
Yeah.
I could add it to the next report. It shouldn't be too hard. I can try to make a report in Shelter Bus to see if it runs it, and then see if it works that way.
Yeah, that's something.
Or if there's a place I can look it up, like, you know, the ones you said bites would be in under vicious, I imagine.
Right. So when these calls come in the way that they're listed here, mm-hmm. is what the caller calls them in as.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they don't wind up being that category.
Okay. I see.
Also, you may have two or three same type of calls associated with one case, like it's a vicious running at large and it bit somebody.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to look at those numbers. I think keeping those things in mind.
Okay.
When you have that, when you have a vicious running at large and bite, do you put it one, or do you only count it?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a triple count. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Maybe.
Yeah.
All right. Any other questions? No? I'll go to Jenny.
Yeah, I sent stats out via email. I did not print any, so I apologize if anyone did not get a chance to look at those. But I'll go over some of that info. But our numbers are also trending up versus 2023. So I just put some specific intake numbers as well as outgoing numbers for everyone. So stray dogs are up 21%, stray cats are up 10%, stray other animals are up 11%, and that is anything outside of a dog or a cat, a kitten or a puppy. So that is snakes, lizards, guinea pigs, rabbits. So owner surrenders are up as well for dogs, 29%. Owner surrenders for cats are up 33%. Others are down 43%, which means probably less people surrendering rabbits and guinea pigs and small animals such. However, they're up versus stray. So we have seen an increase of people abandoning small pets in apartments and things like that. The animal control has been bringing it down. I included born in care because I think this is an interesting data point because we're seeing a difficulty in resources for low cost spay and neuter in our community. The cost of veterinary care is going up tremendously. And I think we're seeing that. So puppies, we rarely see puppies born in care. Kittens are up 360% already versus last year. We also have had rabbits and guinea pigs born in care this year. So 133%. For a total of 236% increase in animals born in care for us at the Humane Society. Our Safe Haven is another community program we offer to people that are coming up against difficulties in their life. So domestic violence, house fire, things like that. We are seeing a significant increase in this program as well. We also have started recently offering it to community members who are trying to kind of better their life and better themselves. So we have people in transitional housing that are looking to get into treatment programs, and we will offer to, if we have the capacity, we'll offer to hold their pet for them for up to 30 days, which it generally goes longer depending right on their need. Mm-hmm. But that's up 150% for dogs, 83% for cats. Adoptions are also up for dogs, 18%, I think, but which lends itself to the fact that we're getting more stray dogs in and more owner surrenders in, so more are getting adopted. Cat adoptions are up 17%, and our other small animal adoptions, excuse me, are down 21%. Redemptions are the dogs and cats that are getting claimed that come into us as strays. So dog redemptions are up 43% and cat redemptions are up 136%, which is it's out of this world. Fantastic. The average redemption rate for cats across the nation is only 3%. So we're seeing really great numbers there. We hope it also translates into helping with the licensing, because when pets are reclaimed, they do have to get a license. If it's within the city of Vancouver or Clark County, we don't offer licenses for like city of Battleground, city of Kempsville, Shugle, things like that. But if it's city of Vancouver or Clark County, they are required to license along upon reclaiming their dog and their cat. We've also recently started vaccinating for rabies before they go up for adoption, which we hope helps that licensing process as well. Just about 96% of the dogs that leave our facility are getting vaccinated. That 4% is puppies, right? Because we don't vaccinate for rabies if they're under 6 months old. We're working towards cats. Cats are a little more difficult, but we figured we'd start with the dogs. So that's our updates.
Any questions for Jen?
Again, sorry. I don't remember. Does the Humane Society offer any fixing a spay and neutering?
We do for cats and kittens right now. We're hoping to start adding dogs within the next year or so. It just depends on our surgery capacity. It takes a lot longer to spay and neuter dogs than it does cats.
especially large dogs, large dogs, a large female dog spay can, depending on the situation, take up to 45 minutes for one animal. Where cats are quick, we're talking like a 5-minute spay on a cat. It's so quick. So it's just about time, space capacity, because dogs just take up more room when they're during recovery. We do have a mobile veterinary clinic that we're getting off the road within the next couple months. So the hope is that we can TURP a lot of the cats spay neuter to that clinic, mobile veterinary clinic, and then be able to start bringing dogs directly to shelter where we have more room and space.
That'll be awesome.
That's the hope.
What's the mobile clinic going to be called?
It is called the Sandra Richardson Miller Mobile Veterinary Clinic. Okay. We call her Sandy for short. Yes. So we're already taking her out in the community for wellness events in kind of high need areas. So Fair House. We did one at open house ministries. So we're just kind of moving over. We do have gone. I think yesterday we went to, the name is escaping me, but it's a low income housing complex that we went and did some wellness and actually went ahead and scheduled a couple people's cats for next Tuesday. Bring good.
Sandy Miller was a, and her husband Ralph, a big supporter of the Humane Society. She passed away a few years ago, but she was very much into cats.
This is a good way to honor her.
All right, any other questions for Jen? Okay, move on to our next special order, discuss appeal.
That's just if anybody has any questions, it just seems to be a standing item. So I think we're used to what the process is. So,
as far as the appeals, so I didn't know if I needed to talk to you, but I had a horse person reaching out to me that had a case and was concerned about one of her horses, and I don't think she realized what. You know, I think she was overwhelmed, you know, when the people came and she was like, just go ahead and pick them, and didn't realize that all the repercussions, like it basically it's, to me, it seems like people then just assumed that she was guilty right away. And she's been going through a thing. And anyway, several of her horses were put down and stuff. And so she asked me to reach out. I need to look at my notes again as far as when her trial is or that.
Is this a calendar?
Yes.
Okay. So she was convicted of animal cruelty today.
Was she?
Yes, okay. She was. Okay.
Yeah. And I didn't know what was happening with her. So. Okay.
Yeah. I don't have all the details since the sentencing. I don't know if the sentencing has happened.
Well, it's in June.
The trial just ended today, the jury trial. And she was convicted of at least one felony count of animal cruelty. I don't know any other details other than that.
Okay.
So.
Well, and I told her, I'm like, okay, I can't have conflict of interest and all of that. And so I needed to ask, make sure I'm doing things kosher and everything. And I know she had just been concerned. And I'm shocked to hear that. Because she had said that she had, you know, vet records and this and that to do that. But obviously it wasn't enough or something there. So, okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Let's move on to administrativeness. We have host bylaw, code changes, code of ethics, subcommittee, monthly hearing board, and then Ryan and Jen's tone, which I think we were renewed to today, right?
So I thought about this just today.
Yes.
You know, it comes to my attention because it's on the agenda. As far as your terms, I think because the bylaws are unclear about how expired terms are handled, it's very clear what the manager, county manager, can do for unexpired terms. She can appoint on the recommendation of this board to fill an unexpired term. So, for example, you resigning, she can fill that and we can find a person to fill that, and there's no voting. Well, there's the committee would have discussion, but there really isn't anything laid out with regard to expired terms. So then that leads me to think that what do we normally do when terms are expired? We have nominations, and the board as a whole votes on them. So that's what I was thinking would need to happen. I've also asked our PIO's office, because we do have your vacancy to fill, and we do have veterinarian or vet tech position to fill, posting vacancies that are available.
Yeah. And I have not publicly announced that yet. Probably in the next week or so I will. We were looking at one place and then it's went through, so it's taken longer. But anyways, I will announce that to the Equine community, so hopefully I can help get people to step.
Right. So I'm going to have a June 1st deadline for applications, per se, of those vacancies.
Okay.
And then bring it forward to, what would that be, the August?
July.
24th, 5th.
Something like that.
It would be
July.
Yeah.
Yes. So, and to fill so I would say that you could at this point vote to extend those terms until that time.
Yeah.
And then if you're still interested in remaining, you would express your interest. And yes. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. So I can't find anything otherwise. And it may be something for consideration of this board to make that clear with an amendment of the bylaws.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, I mean, it's kind of Robert's rules. But if you want to do something else, you can decide on doing something else as a group, I suppose. But that would, I think you would need to clear that up and make it clear in the bylaws.
When was the next meeting?
July 25th. It should be at the bottom of the agenda.
Well, talking about that, I would say motion to extend Jen and mine term until the next July 25th meeting. I'm not going to make that motion, but
I'll make the motion.
I'd like to ask for clarification.
Let's get a second first.
I second that.
Clarification through the meeting or till July 25th. We want to make sure that it covers up through the meeting.
Through the meeting.
Thank you.
Because I suspect at the meeting there will be decisions made on the vacancies and expired.
And I have, and I don't know if it's appropriate to discuss at this point, but sort of like the, I've been kind of confused by the bylaws in relation to the board and the board positions, because on one hand it says that we'll have certain categories represented, but then there's also a statement that kind of indicates there might be some leeway there, which, you know, sort of like, okay, if we're asking, maybe putting the word out and like, hey, know somebody, you should apply, do we need to be concerned about the category affiliation when there is room for there's that the statement that says, is it
made?
Why don't we wrap up the vote on this motion?
Good enough.
And then we move into that.
Okay, that sounds good.
I opposed. Abstention. And it is completely insane. Okay, motion checked. All right. Then let's go into that. The horse, maybe not the bylaws. Horse bylaws, or is that something different?
Rebecca? The horse bylaws code changes, that's not my thing. That was, must have been yours from last time?
Yes. And unfortunately, the horse community still needs to get together and talk about getting those better and everything.
Right. So I would just, the advice that I would give is when we are doing, if these are like, they're not hugely substantial, like massive changes to the code, but maybe smaller additions or clarifications within the existing place in the animal codes for them, We do biennial code amendments every year, and those are usually, we really should have them buttoned up by August.
Yes.
So that we can present them for what we call the fall, which is November.
Okay.
So that would be my recommendation, to maybe bring them or have something, some sort of draft maybe by the July meeting.
Okay.
And then, and then kind of clean up what needs to be cleaned up, or take away or add things that need to be done, and so that we can present, make a recommendation to move forward with changes.
Right. And I will let them know that.
Yes.
Yep.
Thank you. Otherwise, we're going to wait.
We'll let another year.
Code of ethics in two different spots here. Are we talking about two different codes of ethics?
This is not my agenda, so you know, it'll be the person.
So will the horse bylaws discussion kind of go for kind of just for next meeting or no? Okay.
It's, for unfinished business, who's got the code of ethics?
I do.
That's you.
Yeah, so I've submitted multiple copies via email. We discussed it at the last meeting. I received no feedback from anybody as far as making any changes anyway. Nobody had any additions or changes. So are we good to adopt them as they are?
One question, like where does that fall into out of living documents? Like, is that something that we would add to the board definition pages? I'm not too sure how that works. You know where that would fall.
Like, I don't know if it would be something that would be added to the bylaws or just a supplemental document, or
I look at it as like guiding principles on how you come to this meeting and operate. It's just kind of a code of conduct per se, a code of ethics. I don't know that it needs to be entered into the bylaws or codified in any way. It's just an agreement amongst the advisory board that you're going to choose to conduct yourself in a certain way. So we have a code of ethics of the county. It's in our county policy that there is one, but it doesn't actually codify what it or lay out what it says.
That's
for the entire county.
That could then control.
No. It's for the entire county.
That would be interesting to see and to compare with things like, I mean,
I'd be happy to provide that, and we could take it back up at the next meeting. And that way, you know, if you guys have some, you know, just look at what the county's operating off of, and then we can either add it to fold it in, or just say like, "Oh, this works," or whatever.
Yeah, that's actually would might be a good idea to kind of look at it and see and. Add or delete anything that might be appropriate for the body of work that this group does.
We have a conflict of interest policy.
I remember seeing something, that's why I'm like trying to look at them, where it says the purpose of the advisory board. I remember that there were some of these items. I'm sure if we would have them.
I thought that we had had that you had expressed concern about not having a conflict of interest.
Yeah, that's
form.
Yeah,
and everything to go
well, and you know, and something else so within. Yeah, and something that's in the bylaws that sort of brought it, you know, together was the idea that there are these references to the voting, non-voting, mm-hmm. especially with the representative from the Humane Society, and I indicated that in my letter to everybody that. Like that person seems to be missing from the board, the person that sort of like non-voting entity who represents the Humane Society. And I just wanted clarity, you know, collective clarity of what we're, you know, what we want to do. And so that kind of folds into what we're talking about with.
I think what's different here is that Jen is in the role that that person had before in at the Humane Society, and now, but she's also a member of this board. So that's it's an interesting question.
Right.
I mean, there is also a position, though, as well, that there is a voting member that is part of a rescue shelter organization.
Right.
So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't She was filling that role.
I'm not sure which role Megan was filling.
Megan was not a voting. She was not in this capacity, was not a voting. She was just the HSS that representative and came and talked about shelter issues and statistics.
But the representatives of the bank side has never been voting. I think Lisa Better was doing it for a while. And she was they were never voting.
And as a board member, you should be able to vote. And if you choose to pass data from the Humane Society, that's just a courtesy that you present. That way you don't have to forfeit your standing in terms of voting. I mean, I have a long standing relationship with the Humane Society through donation. I have a vested interest there. I mean, years. And I would not want to say, well, I can't vote because I'm pushing to get more and more money for the Humane Society. So, something to consider there.
Tonight is the 501c3, mm-hmm. So that's a non-profit. So, you're not in the sense of making profits. So, I've always considered Jen part of the category that she would be the official representative of the Humane Society.
Except that the official member of the Humane Society shall serve as an ex officio non-voting member.
But maybe we don't have that.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that we eliminate the need for the non-voting?
I wouldn't say eliminate any more than we would eliminate the pairing.
We just allow it to remain vacant?
Yeah. If nobody has that interest or the ability to do it, mm-hmm. then... you know, we can't force them to show.
So, I would love some discussion on this. With indicating that the representative from the Humane Society is a non-voting member, was that put there because it's whoever did these bylaws considers that a representative of the Humane Society on this board as a voting member is a conflict of interest? That's what I'm trying to understand. I don't know if that's just something we have to collectively agree on disagree on. Or
since there are no notes, you can infer that is a possibility. But since we don't have the notes on why that was created, we can only assume that's one of the options.
I don't necessarily see the conflict of interest there.
I don't either.
Yes.
Mind you, this board doesn't make any final decisions when it comes to the financial contract, but we do make a recommendation, right? And if we're making a recommendation for a multi-million dollar contract, and, you know, it's like we all want the Humane Society to succeed, whether we are a donor or an employee, a board member, or just a community member. Like, we want that organization to succeed and be its greatest self. Mm-hmm. But in this setting as an advisory board, like, we have a financial, like, we have a responsibility to make a recommendation on behalf of a sizable contract. And like, I don't feel like we can have anything that looks like a conflict of interest, and maybe I'm alone in this. Maybe I'm, you know, it's like, I just feel like it needs some discussion and it needs some documentation, because either we collectively agree that, hey, we think we're all fine with this, or we aren't. I just would like that documented.
Or in my case, I donate my time to the animals here, and you donate my time to the animals with the Humane Society, because it makes me feel good. But I don't get a benefit from any, you know, I don't get paid from the Humane Society, I get paid from the animal control. So there's no financial conflict of interest from my perspective, unless it's a nonprofit. So again, the more money they get, it doesn't go to the salaries necessarily, it goes to the animals. So it's a possibility that that's where it came from. I don't see the conflict.
Well, I don't think that, you know, conflicts have to be, on one hand, there's the perception, right, from the outside looking in. So there's that. And then there's the, you know, the there isn't necessarily, you know, if you're not getting paid by the Humane Society, you've been, you know, on their board for a long time, you've been showing up and giving for a long time. And that's like, that's fantastic. I just don't, if you're voting on a multi-million dollar contract, that is also like, it's part of your success package, right? You know, and just you as an individual to be able, for all of us to be able to say, we are serving on the advisory board. That is a feather in all of our caps to say, we believe in our community. We're here to support our community and we're doing good things for our community. And that is beneficial for all of us. So, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, single anybody out. I just am looking at the bylaws and there just needs an agreement of clarity of mm-hmm. what that title means. Now, Jen, you do draw a salary. You do get paid by the Humane Society. So financially, you do benefit from the Humane Society. You know, have a job that pays you money. And I'm bringing this stuff up because somebody will, right? It may not be today. It may not be next year. It may not be in 2 years, but eventually somebody's going to bring it up, especially if we start like doing a lot more that is, you know, a lot more visible. And I just like everything to be kind of buttoned up before that happens.
We could take the same path we've had in the past. For example, we made a decision on a case brought before us, and someone had knowledge of who that person was. And we just asked them at this point, is there anything that you can foresee that would make you feel like you should have stepped out of the decision? And the person said what their decision was, and we accepted at that time. We could just present, or if you want to include it in future notes, that we can adhere to any question of conflict at a time when we have an issue that came forward.
I guess I'm thinking of it in terms of, you know, legal conflict of interest, not just a perception. And then it gets tricky because, you know, say somebody comes in, they've got a chihuahua, and somebody loves chihuahuas, right? And they advocate for chihuahuas. So that means that they can't vote on anything related to that person because they've got a chihuahua.
Oh, well, if they're drawing a couple million dollars from the county, then perhaps, yeah, they shouldn't. I mean, financially, I mean, that's all this is about, is the financial component, is that if the Humane Society has the financial contract that the county and the taxpayers are paying that money, I feel like the advisory board, if we are making a recommendation, it needs to be sound, completely sound. You know, I want to be able to say, when we make the recommendation to the county that yes, do this, and then we have to go behind that and make sure that money is always there. Like, I feel like that component's missing, that we, and mind you, I know COVID and all these things have kind of like in the recent past, but, you know, the other piece of this is that as a board, we need to be more active. You know, we have to be lobbying for the money that the Humane Society needs, that animal control needs, and being more of a presence. And in order to do that, I feel like everything needs to be buttoned up to make sure that, there are no problems when we go out there and where people are looking at us like we're doing something underhanded.
So, Donna, from your perspective, is that our role or is that animal control's role?
Yeah, we're not making decisions on where money goes. We're just here to offer an opinion, right? That's correct. I mean, that's correct. I mean, but this advisory board is here to advise. You are here to provide a report to the council once a year on challenges in the community, what animal control means, right, to be successful in their job. Resources that we may need, encouraging pet licensing revenue, because increased revenue benefits our division, allows us to do more. I can see if
if there is a push to accept or reject or question, ask questions about upcoming contracts, then would it be appropriate for people who have an interest in that, for those ideals to possibly conflict? And then if you have a conflict, how do you reconcile that with the folks? It's almost like you would have to pick a side, right? If there's a conflict.
If there's an actual conflict.
If there's an actual
conflict. I see a big difference between a potential conflict and somebody who can't act with integrity, and we have a way to say, hey, this person is acting in a way that doesn't show they're a viable person of this board who would be upstanding to the conduct we'd hope for. To me, you're looking for perceived. Anybody can be perceived to, I'll give you an example. I agree with you. Donna can tell you, Kyle, I've tried many times trying to get people involved. It's really hard to get them to open their pocketbooks. It's really hard to get prioritization towards animals. But if we go out and promote it in the county and you're a speaker for our group, then you have a conflict of interest too, because maybe someday you want to have another job in the county and you're getting yourself well known at the county meetings. So you could perceive that. I've seen people say, yeah, I'm going to do this as a stepping stone to work my way up so people know me, and then and so on. So when you deal with perception of an individual, that's all it is, just an individual's perception. I think we have actual situation where you think the person's not behaving in what I consider a credible way of handling the position, saying, hey, I work for the Humane Society, but I find that they produce the best product that we can recommend. That's just on board. This is what I'm saying. This is what I'm doing. And I respect that. So until we get beyond what it could be perceived and actually have something that can be openly set on the table, like I just gave an example, I don't think we need to worry about it.
Yeah. I think the perception is hard, because anybody's perception is going to be different. The actual legal conflict of interest, like say you have a board, somebody wants to do work for the board, their company, they can do that. So long as it's disclosed to the board and consented to. So it's a conflict of interest, but it can be so long as it's disclosed and voted upon, you can still do that. This is a little different. It's a perception that there's a conflict of interest. I don't think it's actually a legal one, but you could do that in everything, Mike Chihuahua thing. You know, if you're advocating this person for, you know, not having a steep enough fine because you like Chihuahuas and they like Chihuahuas. I mean, the perception gets a little fuzzy.
Well, and that's why I brought up the line in the bylaws, that the bylaws indicate that the representative from the Humane Society is a non-voting member. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say that from the Humane Society that holds the contract. That's not specific. Yeah. And so that's what leads me to question if any member of this board that has an interest with the Humane Society is operating on the board.
But not being a representative of the Humane Society. Jen is not a representative of the Humane Society. She's sharing information with us, but she's not talking on behalf of the Humane Society because she never fulfilled that role. She's here as an independent citizen, kind of like when you went to the city council and said, I'm on the animal control board, but I'm not here speaking on behalf of the animal control board. I'm here as a citizen.
So, okay, so you're saying that that's the same thing. Okay.
I'm trying to figure out the different roles again. So, sorry, I see you haven't been here.
Oh, yeah.
What are the two roles that you have? It sounded like yours might not be completely clear if it was one of those. And then is yours?
Well, I don't have any. That's what I
do like your attempt to do something. I believe when I started, I told everybody I was going to try new things. I mean, and I, following his example, I went to WSU, tried to get us interns to work for you. I went through phone call after phone, finally just said, but then we didn't get any follow through from them. They just didn't do it. But I said, I happen to be on the board, but I'm a private citizen. And I thought this is a great opportunity for you. The person you have to talk to is, and I gave phone numbers. So, yes, you can.
Yeah, see, I feel like, and I think, you know, I could be mistaken. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to, you know, bring it for discussion is that from the bylaws, it doesn't say that we will just advise. It says that we will promote, that we will promote, that we will, you know, what are some of the other terms? Let's see. Promote measures to encourage greater awareness. Okay, so does that mean that I just sit in my house and talk to my husband and then I've achieved my goals? No, it means that we're supposed to be promoting things out to the community, like that we're supposed to actually be active and not just four times a year. And, you know, and I felt like in January, which was 4 months ago, everything seems to just like move really slow and get kind of pushed off to the next meeting. And that's months. And there is, you know, and I feel an urgency with the big contract that's coming up. And, it, you know, you saw what I sent to the city. Those are the questions that I have. And I feel it's appropriate for everybody to say, like, okay, if I'm the only one with questions, then great, here are my questions. Who do I give those to? The representative from the Humane Society that is the non-voting person that can maybe answer these questions? Well, that person, I don't know who that person is. So I just felt like there was some housekeeping that needs to be done in relation to the bylaws, in relation to the board structure, in relation to the board members. And I just like to get it done so we can then like start talking about things like education and going and talking to the commission, the council, and putting together that five-year plan that hasn't even been mentioned in any minutes since 2020. And mind you, I know COVID made everything go nuts, but we're not in COVID anymore. And I'd love for us to like start doing some of this work. That's why I joined the board, not to just show up once at, you know, every 3 months. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do some work. And I, you know, I'm either going to do it with the board, on the board, I can leave the board, go do the work and just keep doing it. I'm going to do it. I just like to do it within the structure that I've agreed to participate in. Mm-hmm. And the further I got into it, the more questions that I had. Questions about the bylaws, questions about the positions of the people from the Humane Society. And what does, and just so long as we're all on the same page, I'm good. Let's just get on whatever page that is. So if anybody does come to one of these meetings and says, hey, that's a conflict of interest in my opinion, that I want to be able to have that argument fleshed out so we know. So we know what we can say, what we're going to say to people, and, you know, we're either going to stand with it or not.
I appreciate all the work you've done.
Thank you.
I would like maybe more time to look into all of that because you brought questions that I now am also interested in pursuing more. And then generally, I don't know if we can ask that one about the contract holder. Like, is there a way to contact the Humane Society contract holder and ask if they would like to also take this role as well so that we have that person, the one that is the non-voting member representing representing the contract?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't part of building that contract, so we could absolutely, you know.
It would be good to ask,
the contract was
I'm part of the building.
Who has contact with them, I guess, maybe?
I do. That would be Megan. That would be the previous person in my role.
So
what I was kind of thinking was very similar. If Jen has to pick a lane, and if Jen wants to be a voting member who wants a cat, then that's what she is, and she's part of this board. If we need an ex officio member from the Humane Society to represent the Humane Society and give us the statistics and what's going on and all of that, then we need to find another person for that. And I would then maybe think about, you know, how this ends up in terms of as an advisory board? Because I've when I got here, I was disappointed in, I thought the board could do more, to do more to support animal control. And a lot of that has to do with education. A lot of that has to do with the fact that we don't get enough money to do our job. Mm-hmm. I have the same amount of staff that I had 20 years ago. Nothing has changed. There's been no increase whatsoever. I'm never going to get more staff because I'm not getting any money. So how does that change? It changes in the community. That's where it changes. It doesn't change because I ask, because when I ask, I get denied. And I got denied lots of times last budget cycle. So it is really about how important are the services that animal control provides to the community, and does the council want to support that mission, that those roles, right? And that is completely and totally, while the Humane Society is a partner of ours and we can't do what we do without them, is a completely separate, it's a separate issue. It really, truly is. And so, you know, if you look at the very first thing that the board, you know, when I read it when I first started, now I probably haven't read it as much as other folks, but it's to advise the Board of County Commissioners or Counselors on issues and needs. We made it to my division. And through planning and other measures, promote the most efficient service possible. Mm-hmm. And what does that look like? So to me, you know, my challenge when I started was I had all of this energy to accomplish all of these things, and I thought it would be so much easier than it actually is. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is just tied to budgetary constraints. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, how does animal control get more money? And I can't go to the board and ask, because that hasn't been successful. I'm just one person. And I, of course, I have an interest, but it really has to be a community effort to what's important. Mm-hmm. Is this important work that we're doing, and should it be funded properly? Should it be staffed properly?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that costs money. Costs a lot of money. So
I'm surprised how much pushback that I've gotten, because I quickly saw in the news we had like 10 businesses or school district with such number of employees. So I tried to push $10 or more a monthly donation to be split between your department and the Humane Society, and I got a pound. I called every school district. The president of the Humane Society, and I went back and forth. And it just didn't go. All it is $10 to have a one-time drive once a year and say, hey, have $10 taken out of your check. And then what I got pushed back from the school districts was, you can just do it on your own if you want to. So that was their pushback over and over and over again. And then the Humane Society had their other plans going. They go, we'll consider this later. But I'm a year and a half into that. Mm-hmm. Okay, funding. Okay, trying to get funding through licensing is huge. And I called and called and called, found out they have free cycles of community announcements. All it takes is the Humane Society and maybe one in Portland say, get together, let's create a 15-second blurb, and every 802 messages will be ours for 90 days, whatever. But I can't get anybody to follow through, regardless of how many calls I've made. And other attempts, I don't need to go further. But the idea of being active, I always present it like I'm an individual. I'm also on the board. Anything that we come to an agreement with this conversation we're having, I have to forward it to the people and have you finalize details. But they're not following up with you. And it's just, it's frustrating.
Yeah. I want to be clear, you know, money, budget, that's not the only thing, right? It's not the only thing, but it is a big thing. And I think that, you know,
myself and my staff have worked really hard over the last couple of years to change public perception in how we provide customer service, how we respond to calls, the education commitments that our officers are making to learning and bettering themselves, the fact that we're taking cases to court. I mean, this court case was the first one in I don't know how long, decades or years, or you know, where the prosecution moved forward with something. And so those are going to continue. Mm-hmm. And I think that raises awareness in the community, but that's a slow roll, right? That's a slow roll for us to do by ourselves on a daily basis when we have 10,000 calls a year, right? You know, I can see the change. I can see the slow change of public perception where I canvass neighborhood forums and
social media
and posts online where there's been a shift. Now, not everybody's bought into that shift, but a lot more.
It's getting there.
And that's
especially when we don't have people that are actively tearing it down. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And when you ask
by people, the way, that's a lot of work.
When you ask people, they don't realize that pet licensing will help officers go out and save and rescue animals. That's the perception we have to improve, and then we get people behind it. Just get your pet license. But that licensing fee is we do this, we do that, we do this, officers can do this. And it needs to happen in a big scale.
I think the people who think about animal control, they think about, you know, the times that their neighbor called in and brought them in about dog barking dog and enforcement and police. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had the pleasure of working for two organizations in Clark County, the Food Bank and the Humane Society. It's both warm and fuzzy things. You know, everybody likes to support the Humane Society. Everybody likes to support the Food Bank because you're helping animals, you're helping people. Mm-hmm. Animal control is a little different because people have a different perspective. I've always thought the way to improve funding for animal control is a better partnership with the Humane Society, because then you're going to be benefiting from that. You know, everybody loves animals and everybody loves to give money to the Humane Society. The only way of getting money, I mean, we don't have enough, but it's selling the Humane Society is a lot easier than selling, you know, other chicken.
That's right. Humane Society / animal control, because you get everybody involved. Like,
Humane Society hasn't always been the warm, fuzzy place either. And the same thing, it's taken years and years and years to kind of start to flip that
for especially
patients.
This might be too soon for this, you know, slogan, but I think it would be really helpful for license your pet equals help save a pet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or something like that to help people start going, okay, you know, like you're talking about. But something that just that quick, easy little tagline, mm-hmm. I was like, ooh, okay, you know, I get to help save pets, which most people are into. Mm-hmm. And that to help generate that revenue. Because honestly, I have never thought of it that way of, oh, okay, this helps.
And what you also have to realize too, is the way that the budgeting works in county government, local government, probably the federal government as well. It is not the way private corporations run their budgets. There's so much rules, processes, and procedures attached to funding. So I'm general fund. Whatever I make gets dumped into the general fund. It does not necessarily correlate with I made $1 million. I get to keep $1 million. That's not how it works. Now, could it work that way? I would need some dedicated funding. And the only people that get to make that decision are the counselors, right? Mm-hmm. It's even donations, right? If you were to donate, or we get somebody who left us $500 in their last will and testament, that $500 gets deposited into a general fund. I don't get to take that $500 and spend it in a way that I think I need in that moment.
Mm-hmm. There's one stipulation to donations. If somebody writes a donation and they say, I specifically want this donation to be for vets, mm-hmm. the county has to spend the money on vets.
Okay, good.
But in order for that,
there's a whole process that I have to go through to set up something entirely different.
Yes.
Own funding to be able to.
Yeah.
That's the partnership. That's what I was talking about.
Yes.
You get that set up. And
what would that partnership look like?
I don't know. I started talking about this a couple of years ago. I was surprised that we could have outside funding.
Mm-hmm. It's codified. It's in the code now. Accepting it and getting those funds actually what I would call dedicated funds is a little bit more challenging.
But you know, both the Humane Society and the Animal Control are good partners, and they both should be motivated to, you know, you getting money out of the county or the city is tough. You're never going to want to give more money than they have to. Mm-hmm. And the Humane Society went through, and they were saying, oh, we'll just find someplace else. Well, they couldn't find anyplace else. Mm-hmm. But we worked with them, and we're still being subsidized. But their counties and cities are never going to get money. It's like the legislature. They don't give a lot of money. They very little. You know, anyway.
Just remember, whatever they choose to give, they're taking away from something else. Exactly. And so that is what I'm talking about in terms of what is the priorities of this, the community. What is most important to the communities? Deputies, sheriff deputies on the road, mm-hmm. or paying for animals, stray animals,
right?
When is it usually?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's an or, I'd say it's an and, right? Like everyone has value. And so it's this and this, right? Okay. Because everyone serves a function. So how do we share that message and get people to understand that this and this are here to work together and support the community?
Or what happens if this isn't funded?
Yes.
What happens if it's only funded at this level?
Yes.
Or, you know, yes, they're both in, clearly.
Yeah.
Right. But we're also talking about selling an idea to a community. And if the county says, it has to be one or the other, or it can only be 70-30, or whatever it may be, right? They get to make decisions now based on their tax dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, they're both important. How that comes out in the wash of the fund is really the issue, right? Mm-hmm. How do you make that as equally important? And I think that's where some of the work of this board can come into play in terms of communicating and educating and just telling, like I said before, tell your friends that, you know, we have the same amount of staff that we had 20 years ago, and we have twice, you know, double the volume of calls. Mm-hmm. How do you expect to have a quality service like that?
I mean, there is a lot of passion and love for animals in this room. And my opinion, we have to figure out how to push it out of this room instead of just meeting four times a year and talking about this stuff. It's like, you know, how do we do a licensing campaign? Well, I'm a filmmaker. Like, if there was a committee or a few people I could work with to like flesh out a creative idea, even if it's a radio spot or something like that, that you had already explored. We don't need the Humane Society or Animal Control to create something. We can create something. We just have to want to create something, because right now it's like doing just sort of like busy work one day every 3 months. Like, that's not helping. Like, we're not helping. Like, we're not helping Donna get the money, because no one has landed in the office of any of the county counselors to just say, hey, thank you so much for that last little bit of money that you gave to Donna. Next time, I'd really love for you to give more, because they are working so hard over there. Like, there is so much value and power when you have an outside group of people that come in and say they are doing a great job. And as the Humane Society, I'm sure you know that. You know, like, that's your board. Your board, who doesn't get paid by the organization, you guys are out talking it up, working the rooms and all that stuff. And people are like, I value that man and I value his opinion, so I'm going to make a donation over to that Humane Society. We're those same people, but we can do it for animal control. We just have to want to. And we have to agree to either follow the bylaws or change them. Like, that's literally, like, I have a massive issue with like being on a board that isn't following the bylaws. Like, right now, there's no 5-year plan. I don't even, nobody seems to know when the last time that 1 year meeting, that 1 year presentation, once a year presentation was done in front of the counselors. Nobody knows. And like, you know, to promote, to, you know, to promote measures to prevent injury. You know, one of those is like, we need to understand what everybody's doing in the county so we can make recommendations and not duplicate efforts. And are we doing any? We're not doing any. And I feel like we either need to, or we need to change the bylaws to say, we are simply an advisory board. We show up and we give you advice. And if animal control says, you know, that is no value to us, then boom, we can all go home and do something else. But I feel like we really need to understand what the bylaws say and agree on what they say. And that would make me feel a lot better. And then we could start actually doing some of this work. We either believe in this mission that of all the work that animal control is doing, the partnership with the Humane Society. Look, you guys want $600 an animal? I mean, you saw the document that I sent over to the city. Those are the questions I have. And if I have answers and I know the work you're doing, I want you guys to have every single thing that you need to do your work. But I want animal control to have their what they need to do their work as well. And we're the people. We're the volunteer board. You know, do you think like your board, like the board for the Humane Society, like if they just kicked ideas around every 3 months and didn't actually do anything, I'm pretty sure your organization would close. So. Not sure.
No, I'm not thinking of offense at all. Actually, you're just basically more outgoing based on what I've been doing. I'd like to.
My first meeting, you mentioned some of the things you were doing, and I was so freaking pumped. I'm like, that's the guy I want to work with and start doing some things.
But to make you feel better, I'd like to go back to what Donna said. I think the one piece is promoting it to the people who can get something done. And that means we have somebody, if you want to talk, you're welcome to it. I'm comfortable in front of, it doesn't matter what level, I can talk to anybody. But we need to get what we want to accomplish in front of people who can accomplish it. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, I can go on about five other things. I'm not going to do that. But as an individual, even if I threw on the, hey, I'm a member of the board on there, it doesn't happen without a great community push, and has to come from people who have the resources, wherewithal, and the backing to make that happen. So maybe to get more of what you're looking to do, or what I've been looking to do, and other people, I know you guys are very active too, is just to get that information up to concur with what you're saying. You have all these cases. We have double the number of pets over this number of period of time. We need more funding. We need more officers. We need more license. Whatever we need to, we got to get that message up. And once it gets there, they'll ignore it. Like, okay, you were asking what we did earlier. Coding. We worked on code for a long time, and we rewrote code about a variety of issues. Mine was the one I remember the most is the length of a leash for a dog in our county, which is ridiculous. Three times the length of the animal. If you see an animal on a leash, three times their length. So if they go to the bathroom one place, sleep one here, want to stand here, there's no room for them. So we tried getting code changes, and just, you tried. I know you did. You came back and said, this is what I said. This is what they did. It didn't go through. And other coding, that was starting off when I was starting 3 years ago, maybe 2.5 years ago.
Before me.
Okay. But, starting off with the code that we respected and wanted. And from once we get the rules where how we wanted them and the issues that we wanted, and you mentioned horse care, whatever it was, but we didn't get anything to go through. And I know you came back and just said, this is what happened. This is what I said. So we just have to keep going and get it to the people who can make things happen.
And I think that we need to land in front of the people that can make it happen. Like, a representative of this board needs to land in front of those people. If Donna's going in for budgeting, somebody should be there 2 weeks prior and making the rounds and taking coffee and donuts and just saying hello and lobbying for those changes, you know, and I'm fine to do that. Like I feel like as a part of this board, I'm like, yes, I am open to do whatever is needed to be done, but I'm not going to do it all by myself. Like, I'm not going to be like doing all the running around, because I don't feel like these bylaws are clear.
Even if you did all by yourself, because I did everything individually for me, you want it sanctioned by the overall group here.
That's right. That's what we need to have.
That's where.
I recommended committees, I don't know, 2 meetings ago, and we still don't have committees. So if we had committees, we'd be doing those things, you know, but we haven't done that. It just keeps getting kind of pushed down the line. They're like, oh, let's kick it around next time. And that's just not, I don't feel like that's acceptable. I really don't. Not when like there are animals suffering, there are animals in need, there are taxpayers who want services, who are calling Donna and calling Animal Control and calling the Humane Society for animal services. We have power here to do something to help.
I think the problem before, what you mentioned about the committees, was just the disagreement on structure. I personally don't want 6 committees. I wanted, if we had committees, I thought it was a good idea for people to get together and work, bring her back to the group. But 6 different committees seemed to me like a number that doesn't even seem functional for a number of people who are here.
Overwhelming.
So I thought a committee who works on the side on an issue. So when they came back to the next meeting, because we could have met. I mean, I'm trying to get my retirement travel in. That's what I'm doing. I'm leaving in the morning for another one. But if I can go, I told everybody I would be more than happy to meet. It doesn't have to be a committee on 10 things, or excuse me, 10 different committees for 10 different things. It could be one committee that says, okay, between now and the next board meeting, we're going to work on this task. You said commercial, 15-second commercial. Try to get the approval from the radio stations to run that 15-second commercial, and then get Donna's approval and make sure it goes all the process. And then when we come back to the next meeting and say, we worked on this, how do we all feel about that? If it's not done, we try to work on that again. But it was structural for me. I don't want to have 6 committees. That's what my opinion.
Often?
That's why I set up a committee or a group. We set a second date. We can all attend. And we can say we want to address this or that. We can do more if we have more time. But if we put in a time, and I know you're working hours and hours and hours, and I know everybody else is too. Now that I'm retired, I have more time. Don't know how I had time before. But there's nothing wrong with having a committee meeting saying we want to have volunteers to go to the committee meeting and we want to address this particular issue. Or if we have more time, we'll go to a second one. Mm-hmm. And we can get those things worked out. Who wants to talk to a board meeting about, I don't think you should have to go and you should go to the meeting like you already do, present your information, make your request. But you shouldn't have to go to lobby.
No, I don't.
And that's why I think that's a good idea. Okay, and I don't care if the same person goes every time. Please don't make it me. But the idea is we can meet and address an issue. And other people are on other boards. Other people have other parts of their life. So if it's not my number one thing, maybe I don't want to do it right now at this particular moment. I go through phases where I get saddened by dealing with issues related to animal cruelty. I'm not going to do it for 2 weeks. I'm not going to think about it because it's just too hard. That makes sense. So people have different things. That doesn't mean that if you're the only one that shows up for the meeting, that you say, okay, this is what I worked on. I was the only one that showed up, or we had 4 and we talked about it. We want to go to the next board meeting and really promote when Donna comes to make her information sharing and requests. So we've already set the stage for her, or we're there to help her.
Okay, so Rebecca seems to have a lot of energy, and I would be, wanting to take advantage of that. Mm-hmm. And is there a way to come to some sort of consensus or agreement on what a committee or two might look like and what their mission and tasks might be that the board could agree on, so that those people who want to be involved that can move forward, right? And I think that's what I'm hearing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure. I can make a proposal. I propose that we put on our agenda each quarter an issue that a committee could meet and work on and present to the board at their next meeting. And that way we have, all right, all the stuff we did on issue or more. We can have more. If we can do more, we can do more. But that way we can have an ongoing proposal to have out of meeting, out of board meeting time to address the issue that we want to.
Right. So to her point, though, about this dragging on and extending this month to month to month, what I was trying, I think what I would like to get to is some sort of consensus that this is, are we okay with one or two committees that address one or two main things, and then trust that those people on that committee are going to work on, as you've agreed as a board, those one or two things so that they can do work in that 3-month period and come up with really a proposal at the following meeting, and not, hey, this is what we want to do, and then come back in 3 months, and then maybe in 3 months after that, we'll have some implementation of something. I think condensing it, I guess that's what I mean. That's
we need to make a motion. I propose we make this opportunity to have an board meeting committee addresses the issue the board wants covered between that meeting and the next one, so they have a proposal for us to address.
And that's how
we should propose and do. How does that?
To propose
it. Well, actually, it's going to be second first.
Okay.
Second?
Yes, second.
Okay. Further discussion?
Yeah, I would like to propose that instead of, you know, trying to do one topic at a time, that we do still have maybe two or more, because I think it would accelerate, and each of us, I'm sure, has different skill sets. Mm-hmm. So I think that if we just maybe went around the room and said, based on these ideas, which I think they're really good, maybe we can to put them into 3 groups instead of 6, just so that we maybe go around the table first and say which ones we feel we have the skills in, and then it will probably create groups very quickly, and then we can say, okay, are you group A comfortable to meet over the next 3 months on this project? And then we can kind of assign maybe projects instead of committees. Mm-hmm. And that way it's more clear, and we have a deadline, and you know what a project and
projects are better words.
Yeah. A project or a task, I think.
Yeah, I think that's what I was saying.
Makes it too fluid, right? Yeah. It's like what specific thing needs to be addressed, needs to be worked on, and the plan needs to be created.
And I think that, like, my idea with the committees was to try to get to that.
Yeah.
Of like,
yeah,
what is it that needs to be accomplished? Like, you know, we can say, like, okay, so let's do something for education. So what does that look like? And actually,
campaign,
a pet life, right?
A good, easy project to start.
Right.
Okay, so I withdraw my motion and reword it this way. Mm-hmm. Like, to propose that we have a board meeting, a meeting time where we address a topic or a project that we'd like to have information gathered, and so that group can present to the board for approval. That makes sense? It's really wordy, but
so rather than committees right now, we're concentrating on the project.
Yeah, yeah.
Projects.
And once we get the project, then you can start looking at committees.
Or
yeah, work out, or break out groups.
Yeah, so work groups.
Yeah. Keep in mind, a lot of them, you don't necessarily need all of the board members to be
right.
Yeah,
oh, right.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree.
But you can bring in your friends too. If you're working with, you know, people you know in the film industry,
mm-hmm,
bring them involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Passion. And you know, at that point, that might look like the people in the committee don't need to be on the board.
Correct.
Project work time.
Yeah.
And invite others who want to get involved.
And then once you've got those smaller, you know, initiatives, then if it's like, this is something that we probably need to do year after year after year,
mm-hmm,
then you establish a committee. Maybe you have one or two people from the board, but you have 5 or 6 other people outside who just wanted to vote their time.
Yep.
And then they make a recommendation, and then the board votes on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always kind of had a problem with people who want to make all the board members, you know, very vested in each committee because you're going to.
Yeah, I don't think that's necessary at all. I think that, you know, people have their strengths and their interests and different. I just want to operate with, you know, proper messaging. I want to, you know, it's like if I want to make sure, like, I'm happy to go and introduce myself to all the council members. I'd like to be able to do it on behalf, you know, as a representative of the board. So I was like, okay, a stakeholder engagement committee, because we also need to have this avenue for the bylaws where we understand what everybody else is doing in the county so we can support. So we can support, you know, everybody can support everybody's efforts. So that stakeholder engagement wouldn't necessarily just be the council. It would also be talking to groups like Furry Friends and, you know, and.
Big variety of things.
Exactly.
So how about we reword my proposal one more time and say, I propose the board creates a project of tasks they want to work on outside of the meeting so they can present to the board. The next meeting.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
My second. Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? None. All right. I feel
that was a good discussion.
Yeah. No, John, that was very good. Thank you.
Oh, I feel really bad for Liz.
Sorry.
The bylaw, I think the committee the recommendation, but I think that was all wrapped up in that discussion.
So what I heard about code of ethics was you want to see the county's policy and perhaps then, and so
I'll get that out to everybody via email to look over before the next meeting, and I think we should be prepared to adopt a code of ethics next meeting.
Yes.
Then last thing on that is before we get to the appeals, potential code changes for cats, you know, cruelty owners.
Yeah, that was me. So I know the code is coming up, and so I wanted to discuss or bring up some thoughts that I could then draft them, you know, based on everybody's inputs, and then we can finalize at the next meeting. So I printed out some things here that I'm going to just do it along. My policy. So basically, we have on the website or in the code these different violations, and most of them have. Did you mention?
Yeah,
we can always go back. Perfect. So each of these offenses, they have three chances per 12 months, and then on the fourth one, I guess they become a habitual violator and the animal gets taken away. And I feel personally that for most of those, and especially cruelty, injury, vicious, running at large, or threatening, that three chances or four chances is way too much. And it not only is it bad for the animal that they might have these things happen to them three or four times, but also with the number of cases going up, I think that it would also make sense for efficiency to reduce the number of offenses allowed before it becomes a habitual and before the animal gets taken away. So for example, yeah, cruelty to animals, I don't think we should give chances after it's done once. There's a lot of statistics from the Human Society of the United States that, you know, if you do something to an animal, then next time you're gonna go and do it to a bigger animal and eventually even potentially to a human. So I don't really think we should give different chances to people because that's just scary for animals. They don't want to have this happen again to them. And so, you know, we could change the code to remove the third offense, maybe even the second offense in some of the cases. And then
are you advocating raising the first offense to 1500?
Oh, I wasn't even looking at the numbers or the penalty dollar amount. I just mean like just not give them more opportunities to do it anymore before the animal gets taken away, so that there's just no third or second problem anymore.
Well, there's two ways to look at it, right?
Yeah.
Limiting the number of chances.
Yes.
And increasing or decreasing, if a person wanted to, the actual fine.
Yeah.
So, Kyle, I like your idea of increasing the fine early.
information that makes it clarifying. So I want, there's a difference between criminal and civil. Mm-hmm. Okay. And this is right here, civil, what you're looking at is civil. And civil actions are, these offenses are meant to be punitive and they're meant to be escalate, right, mm-hmm. with the offenses. As far as cruelty to animals, there's a difference between a civil abatement and a criminal charge, mm-hmm. right? And the only person who can take away somebody's rights to an animal is a judge mm-hmm. through a court order. It's usually when you commit a crime and you've been convicted of that crime, part of your sentence is you can't own animals anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So
that can be civil too. It just has to go through the prosecuting attorney. Yeah, the homes that are hoarder homes, that's all civil. It can be criminal too, but usually it's.
Well, and so to that point, when Nicole, Officer Nicole, is doing a civil citation for a hoarder house, it's cruelty and neglect. This standard here in the civil code is less than what you would have to prove in a criminal court.
Sure, absolutely.
Right. So that's what this is for. So you have a first offense, and what I'm hearing is maybe you eliminate. I still think you have to have levels of punishment as something escalates.
But you're saying maybe they don't have that in terms of keeping their animals, right?
Yeah, because after the third offense, that's only when they get that and we'll take them away.
It's when we can use the word habitual.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would probably argue, and I don't know this, but it's probably a lawyer question for my civil attorney,
mm-hmm.
is what constitutes habitual?
Yes.
Right? So one time is not a habit.
Mm-hmm. True. But at least the second one.
I don't know. So yeah, what is the... what is
to have a pattern.
See? And so may be a reason why it is like that, and three is the magic number.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be a legal standard, mm-hmm. and... to call anybody doing something habitually,
mm-hmm.
that might be it. But we can look into it, and I can ask the question, okay. and get some clarification.
Yeah.
And I can communicate, you know, outside of this and send information. That's totally fine. But again, those are just my thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Something that we would want to consider. Mm-hmm. And again, any code change that we propose that makes sense to us, we always run it by legal to see if it's
legal. Other people would also be interested in potentially, you know, supporting that change for discussion. If you agree that it could help the animal.
Yeah. I would also add that for habitual violators, I don't think that we're really in the business of creating a habitual cruelty to animal. We're going to take this, and if that is something that is serious enough and is occurring, we're probably going to go the criminal route.
Okay.
Right?
That's good.
So we're just not going to let the same person continue to treat animals cruelly. I think this is in this chart just because it's in this chart, and you have to have a place to start with. But when we are dealing with the active case of cruelty,
mm-hmm.
Chances are we will go criminal if we can, if this is an ongoing problem or severe enough. We're not issuing a civil citation for somebody who strangles their dog and kills it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. That's not the, you know.
So the criminal piece handles this. If this is not, it's already handled by the criminal piece. So
if we go that route,
yeah.
We're going that route. So those serious concerns that you have about, you know, that happening. Again, the cruelty to animals definition in Clark County Code is much more broad
mm-hmm.
than it is for the criminal standard.
Yeah.
So you leave a dog outside one night shivering without food or water, mm-hmm. that could be considered cruelty to animals and you could get a $500 ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's not necessarily going to meet this burden of the standard for criminal action
mm-hmm.
where they're going to get prosecuted.
Yeah, right? Those were some of the ones I was worried about, like just the neglect, not feeding and things like that, that could still be going up to 6 more times for the animal to get taken away, right?
I think what you proposed originally, I think at one would probably be a complete rehaul of all of the codes.
Mm-hmm.
But this, if the offenses, as Don is saying, is great enough, then the pathway is to convince the prosecuting attorney to take that case.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more of an advocacy thing, right?
Okay.
And working with the prosecuting attorney. So they're gonna make out the prosecuting ones. And I make recommendations that didn't always agree with the enforcement.
Yeah.
We didn't necessarily think we could, you know.
You're going to find that case. What we use habitual violator for are dog owners who choose not to contain the animal. Owners who allow their animals to bite. But vicious behavior towards other people. We're not really cruelty to animals. We're not really letting that continue to happen.
Okay.
If that helps.
Yeah.
Right.
It does.
There's another recourse you can propose that we communicate with the legal if they get to a second offense and encourage prosecution. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or does a second offense after a second offense is an habitual? I mean, I could ask that question too, because mm-hmm. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
I can make some assumptions, but
mm-hmm. yeah. I guess we cannot propose a motion if we don't know that it's actually possible or it's mm-hmm. wait on second offense.
Well, I think that these code changes, I think they're proposed, and then I can take them and kind of digest them and ask the questions that I need to ask and then bring the feedback back, and then you guys can make a decision on how to move forward.
Okay.
Right. So I don't know that it needs a motion. I think that what needs a motion is when we actually decide we want to make a recommendation to change the code.
Got it.
But okay. If we're not there, you're saying, oh, I'd like to see this. Let's explore. Sometimes it's not as easy.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's really easy. It just mm-hmm. depends on what it is.
Yeah.
So we have a little bit of time, so that's good. Okay. And we'll take a look.
Literally, three separate notices of violation and they've been since their needed 12-month period. So it's defined there.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. And if you wanted to make it two,
yeah.
then you would, I guess, change that statute and make mm-hmm. it two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and maybe it's 2 and 6 months, or maybe it's 2 and 12 months, or maybe it's...
Or you could add some wording that says it's three separate and needed 12-month period, but you can say, but that can be used in the next 12-month period. Mm-hmm. As well, so you don't get a free. Okay, yeah. every year I'll get another free pass. Yeah. So that
we've
way,
had that happen.
Parking case.
So you should write down the wording
mm-hmm.
That you'd like to see her do once she comes back to you.
Yeah. And then for the other ones, so running at large, I think that one you're saying keeps increasing. Like, would it help if we reduced also that one, for example, or vicious, just so that, you know, you don't have to send your officers over and over again for the same issue, you know, realizing that the issue is not going to get resolved because they've already done it twice and they're telling
mm-hmm.
Could that help also for the efficiency of the services? Just because, yeah, usually after the second time, it starts to be a pattern. In my opinion, we don't need 3 or 4 times before we take the further action. Mm-hmm. I wanted to also see for those, not just other codes. You want other ones circled or maybe more of them even, depending on what people think.
So oftentimes when you're doing code, we did this one time, we do a red line
mm-hmm.
and then you can, and usually you want to get within the full body of the code so you can see how it works with the conditions.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted them to do that, then that would be a clear way of communicating what it is that you want.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would say, go to Donna and Officer Leslie and people who are actually enforcing these codes, work with them.
So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be like, hey, the advisory board came up with this idea. What do you think? Yeah. In practice, how do you think this would work or wouldn't work? Or maybe it sparks a different idea.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would do. Mm-hmm. I can send you the last round of code changes that we did that mm-hmm. kind of look in the legislative format that Kyle is talking about so that you have an idea of how he's going to basically, maybe just cut and paste and change your board document to a legislative format and do a strike through. And it's pretty simple, but it does take a little bit of time.
Yeah. I think we increased most of these offenses too.
Yeah.
Increase the monetary.
Oh, okay. Great. Yeah. But yeah, I just didn't want to make you more work, Donna, before, you know, seeing if others might be kind of wanting to support something like that. Because if it's just me, I don't want to make you work for nothing. Because then it would be
it's always a good discussion. I'm a code junkie. And so I love to explore changes of code. And
what about increasing instead of 12 months, making it like 24 months? Like, would that help in practice?
So the only thing I'm going to say is that, is this a state standard that we took out of the WAC or the RCW, which is a guiding principle? Now, that does not mean that we cannot be more restrictive, right? We can't be less restrictive, but we can certainly, the county could adopt more restrictive codes. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's what I would look at and say, okay, this is where this came from. Mm-hmm. I would probably also maybe do research into other jurisdictions to see what it is that they do. And get ideas from other jurisdictions, because that's another thing that I would do. Sometimes you get asked when you're making a code change, well, what is, you know, what's the basis for this, and what are other jurisdictions doing?
And keep in mind that a lot of model codes, they like the model because you can then have a history of how they're interpreted in various jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. So sometimes there's a hesitancy to want to change that because you lose that.
Mm-hmm. And we are to include what we call a rationale statement, mm-hmm. as to why, what is the problem we're trying to fix?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Why don't you share with her the last?
Yep,
thing you
said. That was said.
Yeah.
So think of it in terms of that there's a reason why we need to change something, because something is not working, mm-hmm. or maybe it could work better.
Yeah.
And we have to provide that rationale statement to convince the politicians that, mm-hmm. that, you know, we have a good idea, mm-hmm. and there's data or information to back it up.
Yeah.
So.
I think this is another idea that people would probably get behind, that they didn't want to do this. It's kind of a standing thing. We start in the album, and then we'll move forward, and then more people volunteer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. And then kind of similar to that one, the other one was also, should we let these people who got their animal taken away, is there a way to prevent them from adopting again? I'm not sure if there's anything in practice right now, but there's blacklists sometimes, right?
Yeah, we have most humane societies, at least in our Portland metro area, have do not adopt lists and have people flagged within their shelter databases with information on vague information, right? Not into detail, mm-hmm. the information for staff to see.
Are those shared, do you know, between the organizations?
For our coalition, it is. So we have the ASAP coalition, uh-huh. the Animal Shelter Alliance of Portland. So okay. we do communicate with each other about, you know, concerns about people. And we also are really conscious of not animals that we need to get out of our shelters because of a cruelty situation.
But again, out of the area.
We're also very conscious about sharing that with each other and seeing, like, is there any concern if you take this animal from us that you can safely adopt this animal out?
Yeah.
Right. Without these people identifying it.
Finding you. Find out.
That sharing of communication is really important, because, like, I wrote a judge in Tacoma about a Mr. Elmer who they confiscated his dogs for dog fighting. He had a garage full of dogs and they seized them, and then he sued to get them back. I never found out what happened. If you ever find out, I would love to know. There's got to be a way to keep people who were in that situation from getting them again.
It depends on their legal counsel, because there are some very good animal lawyers out here. So if they get the right one, they're probably getting their animal back.
Wow.
Just saying.
Is there anything else that we could consider changing that anybody has ideas for, yet to make sure even more that they cannot adopt again after doing something?
Yeah, they could always move out. I
can make a proposal that would add something to the paperwork the person gets on the first animal cruelty that says you have an additional one, the fine will substantially grow and will be referred to legal for possible legal action. Doesn't mean they're going to do it, but this, but the person reads that, oh, I would get another one, they might refer me to be charged criminally.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also if we really dig into any type of an educational campaign, mm-hmm. that's something that, I mean, we could have a message of, you know, against cruelty and that kind of thing, because you have people, people can create peer pressure, mm-hmm. you know, and like if people are watching and people know like, oh, wait, there is an avenue to do something about that stupid guy down the road. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times people don't know that there's, that there are options.
And you have to, so, and again, this is where I think the collaboration with the Humane Society comes in, is not every neglect case is purposeful.
Right.
Right. So, you know, and our officers are really good about identifying the problem and then trying to connect people with resources while making sure the animal is taken care of, you know, in a way that needs to be taken care of right then.
Right. Because, I mean, taking someone who is an irresponsible pet parent mm-hmm. and turning them into a responsible pet parent is that's your best scenario right there. Like, because no matter where they go, they're going to be responsible. Whereas, like you said, they could move out of state and go get another dog and do crazy things.
Well, I had a friend once that had to go to work place, and she's like, I don't know why my horse, you know, I have a new horse, or I have a horse. I don't know why they're so skinny, mm-hmm. all of that. Go out, this horse is just skin and bones. And it's, and she's like, I'm feeding him and everything. She was feeding him straw.
Oh.
She didn't know that's not hay, mm-hmm. that's bedding. Yeah, you know, and stuff years. Like that, you know. And
yeah, they don't know what they don't
yeah, they do right. Know. Yeah. And I mean, this is a person that can afford it and everything. And she just didn't know what she didn't know. And thankfully she, you know, she's like, oh, can you, you know, can I have your help and stuff, and able to help her out. And so, you know, and then her horse is fine. But, you know, yeah,
but the neighbor it's looking a over crazy, the fence
yeah.
is going to get upset.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everything.
So it's yep. very easy to, you know, somebody thinks it's cruelty, but it's really just education. Mm-hmm. Really easy to.
Yeah.
So, Founder, were you happy with responses you got here? Yes.
So, yeah.
And Donna's response here?
Yeah. I'll see what Donna finds. I'll do some more research and draft something, bring it to the next meeting, and see if we can get a vote.
Perfect. I need to wrap up this.
Sorry, I can just briefly mention it and bring more. It was also just if there's anything that we can do to put a limit on the number of cats somebody can own, because there is a maximum of dogs, I think it was 3, but there's no maximum of cats. And I can also research more, but I was wondering if that could help order situations to be prevented and just
There's no limits to cats in the county. Isn't there a limit in the city? City of Vancouver has a limit. Yeah.
I was going to say, I don't know if the city does.
Kittens does a cat.
Dogs, yes.
Yeah, dogs.
Yeah.
How many cat is a litter? How many?
5, 6 kittens.
5 or 6.
1 to 10. All right. And they can have
to be. Well, and you know, and I think trying to figure out kind of what's, like Donna said, like sometimes those are not intentional. Things can get away from people when they don't have resources for spay and neuter, when they don't have resources. I mean, they, so it's like, yeah, it's.
Greenhouse and guy had cats, and I think he started with 2 and ended up with 30. And, you know, 8 of them were carrying litters of kittens, yeah. or, you know, and he just.
It can get out of control, especially with cats so fast.
In the city, they reported it to the some lady jogging by reported it because she smelled the urine.
Oh, wow.
From the sidewalk.
Wow.
And so you have a situation where is that neglect or cruelty? Technically, sure.
Yeah.
But is that the right path to go with, you know, criminal or GU
work with somebody, you get them the resources, you tell them, you clean this up, we'll take some of these.
Mm-hmm. We'll get you spay and neuter, get some spay and neuter stuff going.
Too late for cats. And he was willing to pay all of the costs that were associated, so the city didn't have to pay it. He paid $4,000 for all the boarding and of these cats, and then, you know, they moved through the rest of them moved through the system, whatever mm-hmm. that was.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's got a clean house, and he's got spayed and neutered cats, and he has a much more manageable situation. And that was because we all kind of worked together to get them.
Do you feel like having a limitation on the number of cats would, like you said, obviously the problem that to be solved is that people don't have crazy hoarder situations.
Right.
But would a code change accomplish that? Like, how would that, you know, because it's not, I mean, nobody wants to go like, okay, well, we're here for your 50 cats. You know, they're all spay and neutered, and that's still 50 cats that somebody has to absorb. The Humane Society has to absorb that. That can always, I know those situations can be really problematic and really taxing.
Well, it's hard too because, like, we live out on the farm, and with livestock, our dogs, our cats are super safe. We have them forever. We have 10 cats,
mm-hmm.
but I only ever see two at a time. Like,
yeah, so 10 cats would make sense.
10 cats in an apartment is insane.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 10 cats on the farm,
mm-hmm.
I have one litter box. Like, you wouldn't even know that
I have a litter box.
What you're saying is the code should reflect the ability of management of mm-hmm. animals versus.
That's why it's hard that it's maybe not as easy. Like, it's easy to put a limitation on dogs because dogs require so much more versus a cat that even somebody that has 10 cats in their house, it can be very manageable, but it can also be insane.
Yeah.
So it's hard to regulate.
It's hard to punish the people who are good pet owners who
yeah.
want 10 cats
mm-hmm.
because of the people who even maybe yeah. can't manage cats. Yeah. And I don't know if I don't think it would resolve the hoarder situation.
Yes, they're going to hoarder regardless.
Yeah.
Especially, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
When you find a hoarder situation, like, what can officers or the county then do to help these people understand this was maybe too many? Like, can we say a recommendation maybe? Like, you should only have this many cats per square footage according to the animal
the Humane Society, don't they have recommendations for how much space an animal, I don't know if they do.
No, that's only exist for livestock. I'm only aware of, like, you know, as far as acreage goes for livestock, but there's no, we just follow the city, you know, the city.
And so that's where you rely on the officers to do a really good job at education mm-hmm. and while we can't say you can only have four of these back, we're having those collaboration and community conversations with somebody to say, you know, we don't want to see you get into this situation again. What do you think might be more? Get that buy-in from people. And then, oh, well, you know, I really like those four. Okay, four works, you know. Mm-hmm. I would prefer much rather to have the freedom to do that mm-hmm. than to say, well, the code says you can only have three.
Yeah, right, because then yeah. the community, you know, animal, you know, average animal lovers are going to come for you if you start taking people's yeah. animals away mm-hmm. when they're, like, trying.
Yeah.
And there's always, I mean, cats, it's always a crisis with cats. Like, and it's even worse since the pandemic. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, cats, like, all the progress everybody made prior to the pandemic just sort of evaporated. And I know everybody's just struggling. So
I think that's a piece where cats are also, right or wrong, not valued as much as dogs are.
That's true.
It's a different companionship. It's a different relationship. And I think people are just like, oh, it's a cat. Right?
Yeah.
You have people who believe in the community that cats should not be outside.
Yeah.
And then you have a whole other part of the community who thinks cats are hunters, seekers. That's their thing. You should not be denying them that. Right. And so how are you ever going to reconcile
that? Yeah.
Right.
So you bring a hunter cat in your house.
I think this is all a long conversation that we can have all night.
Let's not. Let's
I didn't want this to be a long meeting.
Yeah. All right. So now let's move forward into the appeals. We have two of them here. It should be shorter than that, in my opinion.
I think either of them are very long. Good.
Why don't we turn to this a little bit? Which one would you like, Officer Lovely, first?
I mean, either or, it doesn't matter. Anything.
All right,
in the future, is there any way that we can bypass that stuff so we can get
both? We normally do, but I also know that Officer Leslie likes to listen to some kind of
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's educational for me.
Okay.
I might not do that within the
draw. Okay. Cool. I was feeling sorry for her in the corner, but yeah. Never mind. I don't feel sorry for you.
Let's start with Miss Valentina Zirard and Maria.
Miss Valentina. Shortly after our last meeting, with the last appeal for Miss Valentina, I received a report from the reporting party who goats were killed about this dog running loose against the code of it being considered a dangerous dog. They provided me security footage of the dog loose, not contained, not on the owner's property. And in addition to that, the dog also decided to take a giant poo right in front of their gate, and the owners of said dog decided not to clean it up.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote the citation for both running at large and also the dog depositing excrement and the owner not picking it up. In the statement that they provided with their appeal, the daughter had turned 18 of Valentina, and the mother is now saying that it is her daughter's dog and making the daughter pay all the fines and fees that the dog has accumulated. I feel that, everyone in that family knew what was required. I had conversations with both the mother and the daughter. They were present for everything, including the original appeal. So they knew what was required of them and still failed to do so. I request that no reductions be made based off of the history of this dog and the irresponsibility of the owners and being a family as a whole. Everyone was responsible for the misconduct of the animal.
All right. I'm going to put that as the proposed motion. Do I have another motion?
I propose a motion not to reduce the fee. Is that good?
Yeah. Motion on the second. Any further discussion?
I have one question. At the time this the citation, this one, was the person who is now 18 a minor?
I do not know her birthday. So she informed me that she had turned 18 and the dog is now hers, but it is still licensed under her mother's name. So whether or not the mother chooses to pass along that fine and fee to her daughter,
That's
but the citation is written to the mother. Statement is made by the dog.
Thank you very much for clarifying.
Mm-hmm.
All right, any other questions? All right, not hearing any. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The extension? Motion carried. All right, then let's turn to Catalina Burke.
So, I'm sorry, I'm pulling it up right now on my computer. So, Katarina Burt, I'm refreshing my memory.
February was a long time ago.
All right. it's also not a case that I deal with often, unlike the previous.
Right. The one with the photographs of the dog. Right, what it looks like.
Yes. So with this one, I had previously gone out there, spoken with the owners, and issued an abatement for running at large. After that, I did not recheck in for licensing until I received another report about running at large. I wrote citations for, you know, second offense licensing as well as running at large offenses. Since these citations have been written, the dog owners have licensed their pets. Normally, after the first offense citations are written, if the correct licenses are purchased within 10 days, we waive the fees. That is not something that is written into the code for the second offense. And they have requested, you know, reduction in fine for that. They have since purchased the licenses, and they have purchased also a containment. I think it was a underground fencing system, and I have not received any further reports of the dogs off of the property. So I was recommending that since they are making steps and they are attempting, and they so far have been successful for 2 months, that I would recommend that if you guys see fit, that reduction in charge.
Reduction. They paid $500 for the licensing. All right.
And I thought for the citation, and then pay for the license.
And what's the remaining amount?
A total penalty was $1,300.
So total penalty is $1,300. They paid $500. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's an $800.
No, the $500 is the first citation.
Oh, I'm with you. Okay.
But the second citation was the second offense, so it went from 500 to 1,000.
Oh, okay.
So the remaining 300.
It shows licensing $800 and running at large for $500.
Or you could maybe not put a license for the second. Do they still owe 1,300?
According to this.
Mm-hmm.
But they did license their dogs.
And they paid the first. And they did pay the first citation.
But even though they're not licensed, they still, I guess, owe the licensing. The fact that they did not license that, right?
They paid the running at large the first time.
Okay. I'm pulling it up right now.
I was confused about that too.
Why did they license before this?
No,
I'm assuming not, since it's out.
Mm-hmm. No, they did not. I wrote citations for licensing. Okay. So the first time this case came up, I wrote citations for licensing and an abatement for running at large. They paid the citation for the licensing, and then
but never licensed.
So they paid the citation and license the very same day after they got their second citation. The licensing was $25 a dog. Yeah.
All right. So we still have $1,300.
But you haven't had any incidences in the 2 months since they put up the electric fencing?
Correct.
And then the breakdown of the $1,300 is $1,000 license?
Yep.
$800. Okay. That's it.
So it's $400 per dog.
Yeah, that's it. Okay. And then they're running at large.
And then they're running for dogs. That $500 is an increase from the first time that they did pay, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they paid their first time after they got the second time, which is what confused me. They were supposed to pay within 30 days, which they did not.
So are you recommending that we waive the rest of the amount?
I wouldn't say I'm recommending that the entire fee be waived, okay. But if you feel that a reduction in fines would be something you would consider, I am not opposed to that.
Okay.
I mean, at large.
But this is the second
time we're running up. I'm a big proponent of someone who tries to fix the problem, although they didn't do it.
The first they didn't do it. Yes.
And how long apart was that, the first time versus the second?
1 month. And
I mean, if they go on vacation, I went on a vacation for 3 weeks in February, and if I were there, I would have had a hard time to pay and fix things up. So like, I don't want to give people the doubt that maybe 1 month is not always enough. But
I propose we make the total fine $650, leave it at that.
I second.
Yeah, the motion, I second. Any further discussion? Hearing any? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. All right. Thank you all for the vote.
Thank you very much.
Taking it out with it for long.
Yeah, thank you.
I don't see anything for announcement due to the order.
I'm going to add one announcement with regard to code changes, since we've talked about code changes. The last cycle of code changes we went through are finally being officially adopted May 3rd. They will go into effect. There were a handful of animal control codes that were changed, some at the recommendation of language by the hearings examiner. We included a license for potentially dangerous dog, a license requirement where there wasn't one before. But the big one is we have now required that all veterinarians in Clark County and the city of Vancouver report their rabies vaccinations.
That was controversial.
And it wasn't controversial for the board, for the council. So that went through. So that is, it's big. It's I think, when you guys are talking about committees and help and all of that, that it's going to be a big project it's going to fall a lot on Jackie to be notifying veterinarians, vet clinics of the changes. And then once we start receiving that data, having to enter it and cross-reference and all the things, and then making sure these folks are actually licensing their pets on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big one.
Where's the new one? You guys are back researching licensing software again.
So we have awarded a contract. We have an RFP. Picked a vendor.
Okay, great.
Right now, we're where funding and budget comes up, it's going to cost X amount of dollars.
Yeah.
And we are looking, the next step is to get that funding secured, which means that I have to get the council to authorize an additional, and it's probably about $30,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have $30,000 in my budget, so I have to have the council give it to me. And so where's that going to come
from? What did you make from that official ask?
So the IT department is making it an official ask, because to try and make a long story short, we had an old system that mm-hmm. is no longer going to be serviced, and so we're limping along with it. So IT's part of their job is to anything that was in this system had to find a different system to be in.
Okay.
So building permits went into the system, and so we're kind of the last piece that needs okay. to get out of this antiquated system. So IT had a budget for that, and you know, but we're the last ones in, so maybe the budget isn't as big as it used to be. Anyway, and then it's an ongoing cost, right?
Right.
So that has to be also considered and approved going forward. So that's going to happen in the month of May.
Okay.
And then once that happens, we can sign a contract, and then we can get the actual products delivered to us.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. So, it's called Pet Track.
Yeah, Homish County is a good, there's county use of the, I like it.
Yeah,
it's simple. It's easy.
We're excited to back.
Well, thank you. Any other announcement?
I'd like to propose that we have a topic for a task. And I would propose it's communication methods, goals, and topics for the county council and to the community. That way we can address one or both and come back and say, okay, this is what we want to present, or this is what, how we want to get it, what we want to get out to the community. It's a topic, you don't have to prove it, but it's just a proposal.
I would like to maybe propose also for bylaws review, just because it's coming up and other people wanted to look at the bylaws together, that we also have another project for that. Interest all of this, I'll pursue the ones I proposed. And
you mean even codes?
Sorry, the
yeah.
Code.
Yeah. And what was the
problem? Basically, communication to the council and to the community and how we're going to do it and what we want to do.
So that's kind of like stakeholders and education.
I think you need to get even more specific than that. Yes. I think you need to say what topic do we want to communicate.
That's what I'm saying. Pick the topic and how the method of what we want to approach. I mean, I'm just trying to give us something to go on before we.
I would say, just from listening to everything and what I'm hearing, is that codes is probably a good time to start on codes, mm-hmm. because that's coming up. We have a deadline on in the back and forth on making those recommendations. I would say licensing, yeah. right? And you talked about making a commercial, and that code is coming through with mandatory reporting for veterinary clinics.
It's public education and outreach regarding licensing.
That ties to licensing.
And messaging it around how it's tied to resources for
people. Yep. Because we can do more than one little spot. I mean, we can do, it's...
Yeah, something that I have been thinking about and I think could be a good resource for also is staffing. Like, what does it look like across other counties and cities as far as their staffing goes for animal control in comparison to their population, right? Mm-hmm. Like you said,
amazing.
This hasn't, staffing for animal control has not changed in over 10 years, 15 years. Like, I think we have the same amount of
20 years
staff that it's when I started at the Humane Society in 2009. Like, mm-hmm.
It's been 20 years.
And we're pushing to be one of the second largest cities in the state. Mm-hmm. Like, we're huge, we're growing. And so our geography is very broad. Like, we're not a tight city, right? Like, we are spread out.
Yeah, look at the map.
Yeah.
Well, so. At some point, the county needs to approach the city of Vancouver and say, we need to pony up for another officer to patrol the city.
Yeah.
Right?
But, the fact that you've been running with the same number of officers for the last 20 years is outrageous.
Which is why we're 5 days a week instead of seven.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can't provide those services.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think through some of this outreach, we can maybe help mold the narrative, of really kind of reshaping the perception with the decision makers that this is an important service. Mm-hmm. It's in so many ways. I mean, I think that there's a number of things that we can do.
Even on the paperwork that gets, right, or the licensing letter or whatever, like the messaging that says on there, and helping animals through this, and that's an opportunity.
Yeah, it's community safety, it's public health.
Yeah,
I mean,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Well, I think you guys do a much better job, because you have that's your larger wheelhouse, and it's your machine that helps with your organization. So I would,
All right, so I would encourage all of you to communicate amongst yourselves about the ones that you think are important to you, and maybe partner, and then come back at our next meeting, and then we would have perhaps four proposals that we can evaluate and see what we have the capacity to tackle and who's got the energy to do it.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
I was going to say, and I think one of the things that I know I need to be, I think we all can be mindful of, is everyone's ability to contribute. Like, mm-hmm. I'm more than happy to contribute where I can. I probably don't have the ability to contribute like as much as you would, because I, just my life, right? Like, I work for it. I'm working 40 plus hours a week. I have three children, like, right? But I'm more than happy to be a resource. I'm more than happy to kind of share my knowledge and
share information.
And I think that we can all be support to one another along those lines. Absolutely. Like I don't, you know, if I have more time, I'm happy to do it. I want to make sure that I understand the parameters and that everybody understands what I'm doing. And it's not like some massive like shocker or like, wow, you shouldn't have done that. You know, it's like, and in the meantime, I'd like to also just before we leave here, I would like to start engaging the council members on an individual basis. Like I'd like to next week, if everybody's okay, to take donuts and coffee. If I have to set an appointment and it's just simply to say, thank you. I'm just going to say, thank you. Thank you for supporting animal control. Thank you for just like showing up and caring, right? Even if they don't, then they're going to go, I think we need better. Well, you know, whatever, however it works, but I'd like to start that, especially because you've got an ask coming up in May for money for the, you know, for the software and that's not going to change, right? It's like just, I want to start enlisting them to really be a support.
And keep in mind, nobody, you know, everybody has the right to do that on their individual
capacity. Oh, perfect. Okay. Yeah,
we want to be careful about the messaging coming from the advisory board, though, too,
yeah.
Because we all
understand. That's how I've handled it. I've said, I'm a member of the board, however, I'm approaching you this, about this, in this way. And then when I started getting the conversation going, they start going back and forth, and I refer them to talk to the board.
And I'd like to go to them as a representative of the board and say just simply like, and honestly, this first go round, it's just to make an introduction. We have to let people know we have great people on the board. We have some great minds, people that are really dedicated, and we've got some cool things coming up.
There's some ideas.
Exactly. Like, how's everything going in your area, mm-hmm. right? Just whatever it is, so they can start putting other faces, you know, to these efforts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have found that, like, if you show up and you know, if you're and working in the nonprofit sector, you know this, like, you show up, you give it value. Mm-hmm. You take your time, you give it value. And value can be contagious. Mm-hmm. And I just want the council members to be in support of animal control. So when Donna goes and asks them for money, they're like, yeah, heck yeah. Because then when those go to public hearing, one of us is there, like giving them a little bit of testimony, like this is really important, you know? And then if they go against it, it's easy to say no,
it's no
when different. No one's watching, right?
No different than the advice I gave Megan about it. About the contract.
Oh, I don't know.
Well,
I don't know the advice.
the advice to Megan was, because this big ask that's coming with this contract expiration is go get some buy-in.
Yeah.
Make it important to somebody, because I'm not making the decision whether to give that amount of money to you.
Yeah, yeah.
And they may look at it and go, no and hell no. Or they may go, absolutely 100%. Mm-hmm. And really, my advice is go and talk about how why it's important,
mm-hmm.
the public safety, health is, right? If you're not talking, they're not listening, and they've got other people talking at them about other subjects. And so it's not that they don't care, it's just not in the forefront because they're not hearing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's like kind of advocating for yourself. Well,
it's the squeaky wheel gets the cream.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So basically what I'm hearing you ask us, though, is as the board, do you have our permission to go do what you just said?
Yeah.
As not just as not as an individual, but as a member of the board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do you have to do a motion and all of that fun stuff?
If you want, you're now creating various modes of communication. That's what I'd be concerned about. Like, it all sounds good, but if we have all of us doing this and go into the people and we're saying 8 different things, which could happen, then
right.
Nobody's going to be listening.
That's why I never said I'm here representing the board.
Yeah,
I'm here because I really hit.
Well, why don't we just select one person then to go?
Yeah.
We don't have to all go. Just somebody needs to go.
You should be selecting the message.
That's what I agree with.
Well, the message right now is, hi, advisory board, how are you?
in the recording.
Okay. If you're saying you want to represent the board by just saying, remember the board, we want to let you know we're interested in what's going on here and let you know that we're active.
Donna's working hard. Animal Control's awesome. Humane Society's awesome. Everybody's doing great work. Just want to make sure you know that.
The other piece was
relationship
building. How to establish communication, and the topics that were mentioned were licensing, staffing, and funding. Codes.
We ran out of minutes.
It came back. It's recording again.
So for the code, do you want to tell me if you want to participate in that, or should I just email and then cancel those people?
Yeah, and I can generate an email about that has all the lists of the different types of kind of projects that we talked about, and then everybody can just sort of start communicating.
I really like the idea.
I don't know when I'm going to drop off on the communication.
Yeah.
And I'd hate for the horsey community to lose out. So is it okay if I get both of your phone numbers or emails to just send whoever's the next person to contact you, just in case I'm out of the email stream and the next person isn't on when you email?
Of course.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Actually, you have my email.
So is everyone okay for me to go and visit council members and just do an introduction and say nice things?
Yes.
I would say yes. I would love it. I propose that she goes and greases the squeaky wheel.
and says
very, very nice, wonderful things about Animal Control,
Humane Society,
and how freaking awesome all of us are.
That's right.
And that we appreciate all they do for us.
That's right.
All of us.
Yes.
So she could go.
I have a motion in a second. Do I have discussion questions? Not hearing any. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Extensions, I'm going to abstain. Or she cares. <All
right. laughs> Woohoo! Yeah. Okay. Do you want to go ahead and.
Okay.
All right. I text myself all the time, all night.
Thank you. Thank you, Jacqueline.
Thank you so much.
And thank you so much, you guys.